The third case set for argument this morning is Avera St. Mary's Hospital versus Sully County. Robert Nelson is appearing and will be arguing on behalf of the appellant hospital, and Jack Heap is present, will be arguing on behalf of Appley Sully County. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Nelson, you have a 5-minute rebuttal. You can proceed, Mr. Nelson.
Chief Justice Jensen, justices, counsel, clerks. Why are we here today? This case involves a non-resident of Sully County that had an emergency situation to befall him. The court can reverse the trial court's order and provide the guidance that the trial court was so desperately seeking regarding SDCL 28-13-37. And you can find that in the court record at page 76, without usurping legislative authority and rewriting section 37, as county contends, and without even overruling or even modifying Roan, simply distinguish it on its facts from JR and hold that it is not enclosed, not controlling. Professor Larson taught me well on the way through this esteemed university that in order to be a controlling precedent, you needed four things. You needed the parties, you needed facts, issue, and law that were all similar. Roan is sorely missing on at least two, if not three, of those four matters. There are 23 counties in South Dakota presently that are without any operating hospital within their borders. One-third of the counties within South Dakota. So section 37 and 38 have meaning, they're important, and this is not a problem that can be ignored or simply swept under the rug. The last hospital that operated in Sully County was in 1894 when Fort Sully burned and was abandoned. Starting with the statute, section 37 places a duty or a legislative mandate on the county that is twofold. First, they are to examine into the case upon notice or complaint made. And second, grant such temporary relief as the nature of the case may require. Section 37 places absolutely no legal duty or legislative mandate on Avera St. Mary's, but on the county. In fact, the entire chapter of 2813 dealing with medical indigent care places no duty or obligation on any hospital. It's all upon the county. The county did not effectively complete the first step of its duty under 2813-37 in this case, even after Avera St. Mary's provided a notice or complaint to them on 8-22-14. 3 days before JR was discharged, while JR, present tense, was still an acute inpatient at the hospital and still certainly lying in distress. Why didn't the county investigate? The county really hasn't answered yet. But the common overarching theme throughout this entire case has been the county is not going to pay for a non-resident. Even after the first hearing to the trial court in January of 21, when the court advised no one is asserting JR is a resident of the county, but Section 37 and Section 38 enacted by the legislature clearly makes Chapter 2813 or the relief covered by 2813 applicable to non-residents as well. And then on remand, the court said, go back and make your decision and come up with rationale or a record that supports your decision. The county comes back. Number one reason on their decision, JR is not a resident. And then the other reason, indigent by design, I'll basically refer to as a half-baked affirmative defense that was suggested by their outside consultant and outside counsel. The trial court found as matters of fact that nothing under the indigent by design defense was supported by any facts in the record. So again, this court need not rewrite Section 37 or touch Roan materially in any way other than to hold it in opposite to the instant case and not controlling. But this court must reverse the trial court's order affirming county's denial, or it effectively overrules 97 years of judicial experience. Five different judges on the bench in those cases, that sampling of cases submitted by Avera in Appendix E, every one of which ruled in favor of Avera. That's 97 years of experience just on the bench. I'm not counting the years of legal practice before they got there.
Counsel, so the issue in this case is not what Avera was required to do, it's what the county was required to do, correct?
Correct, and did not do, yes.
And so how do we tie this particular statute that's at issue to the county when you're dealing with a non-resident if there is not some temporal component that we look at as to when this person who is not a resident in the events that the statute talks about triggers the county's duty?
Well, Justice Delaney, I think we can all agree that 37 is drafted in the present tense. It uses is. So if you look at the statute, the non-inhabitant, the inhabitant but the non-resident, must be lying sick therein or in distress. I submit to you that Avera complied with the or in distress component of that, because even though he wasn't within the county borders.
Well, again, we're not looking at whether Avera complied with anything. We're looking at what the county was obligated to do under the statute when.
Okay, I submit that the county was obligated to investigate into the case as soon as they got that notice or complaint from Avera, which they sent 8/22/14, 3 days before JR's discharge, and then to provide whatever temporary relief the JR required.
So you referred to the statute being present tense, which I, as I understand, is also the argument of the county and what the circuit court ultimately determined here. But that at the time they received the complaint, this non-inhabitant was no longer lying sick therein or in distress in their county. So explain to me why you think that is not a correct interpretation of the statute.
Because that is not what the statute says. I'll submit both the county had extensive trouble with that focus, as well as the Roan court itself. They misquoted the statute. They put the word therein after lying sick or in distress. You can look at the court decision yourself and see it multiple times in Roan itself. You can look at the county's brief, and they moved the word therein to after in distress. If that's not exercising legislative prerogative or authority, I don't know what is. That's not what the statute says. It's the plain meaning. It's the way the statute appears. The legislature clearly could have put the word therein after in distress as well, and didn't. The legislature clearly could have used the word and instead of or when talking about those two conditions, but didn't. As this court has held, as the county has argued, it's not our job to usurp legislative authority and rewrite the statute.
So the question still might be out there, or maybe I missed the answer. So in addition to sort of a temporal component, it almost seems like there's a situs component too. You get a complaint and they're lying sick or they're in distress, but therein would seem to mean that there's a situs component to it, which is to say that they're in trouble, however you define it, within the county at the time of that complaint. Is that wrong?
I would agree as to the lying sick component, but the situs, the court has to figure out how to uphold the statute and interpret it as enacted by the legislature for those 23 counties that don't have a hospital within them to provide the nature of the medical care and treatment as the case may require. And the only way to do that is to say, well, as long as the county gets the complaint in the present tense while the person is still in one of those conditions, either lying sick therein, yeah, or the person is still in distress. Now, to answer the other component of that, or the other shoe drop, well, how do we prove that this falls on Sully's doorstep? He came from Sully. It originated in Sully. The court found, trial court found, as a finding of fact, the record is clear that he was brought from Sully County. You look at J.R.'s history, he'd been in Sully County for half his life for the last 10 years, working 6 months every year as a groundskeeper for Sutton Bay. That's more than just the 28 transient paupers on the top of the train cars in Hutchinson County, incidentally riding through Hutchinson County.
Well, the statute contemplates he's not an inhabitant, so that's not really an issue, right?
No, it's not.
Okay.
So, the only way to give meaning to every word in the statute, to uphold the legislature, is to say, well, if he's lying sick therein in the county, or he's in distress when the county gets the complaint or the notice, which clearly JR was, because he wasn't discharged for 3 more days after his acute hospitalization. Let me remind the court, JR presented, first of all, he was driven to a clinic in Oneida. That's the only medical care and treatment available in Sully County. In the medical community, staffed by a PA, no disrespect, but that would be referred to as a first aid station. That PA took one look at JR and said, I can't help him, get him to the emergency department. As soon as he showed up at the emergency department threshold in at St. Mary's and Pier, he was in surgery within an hour. He was at death's door. Burst appendix, full of sepsis, which is serious and life-threatening. But for their emergency hospital care and treatment, he would have died. If they would have been required or worried, quite frankly, first about, well, who's going to pay this rather than saving the life, and having to drive him all the way back in so that he's inside Sully County to say, oh, commissioners, we got a problem here. You need to take care of this guy. And they have to talk about it and then decide. That's an absurd result that no statutory interpretation can support.
No one's really saying that's what the statute says, surely, right?
Well, that's the only way to comply with the situs requirement if, as asserted by the county, it should apply to both situations.
I don't know if there's compliance or non-compliance. It's just the set of circumstances that the county confronts under the 37 statute. Neither of those conditions that apply fit the situation that the county is confronting, or they don't. It doesn't really seem like a statute that needs to feature compliance by one way or the other.
Well, the county would certainly assert that it does, because the trial court turned its decision on one central fact. There was no compliance or notice to the commissioners while JR was still within county borders. He'd have been dead if there was.
Compliance in the sense that Avera's complaint was an effort to comply with the 37 statute.
Yes, and that's what they had to do. They couldn't wait till 15 days after the date of admission and send notice as they would with a resident under all the other statutes under 2813. But it's instructive and noteworthy that they sent the complaint or the notice present tense while JR was still lying in distress, albeit not in the county. If Sully County had a hospital, you know, maybe Avera would help manage it and they would have been managing it in the county, but it doesn't exist. Has not for 100 and some years.
The statute doesn't say that the county has to pay bills or do anything. Specifically, it says that they have to give temporary relief.
Well, and I'm sorry.
Pay the bill, is that temporary relief or is that just relief?
It's temporary relief. It's not unlimited, clearly. And if the court looks at, interestingly enough, Roan itself, which also cited Hamlin as one of its main cases, but Roan itself referred to the emergency care and surgery provided to those 28 transient paupers off the train in Hudson County. Quote, in this case, it clearly appears that temporary relief was in fact actually furnished by some good Samaritan. Roan at 39, court record at 98. This court in Roan already labeled that temporary relief. If you turn to Hamlin County, which is 1890, 28 odd years before Roan, I quote, "The legal duty imposed upon a county to grant temporary relief to such persons as are designated in section 2161, i.e. non-residents, is quite as obligatory upon the county as the duty imposed of relieving all poor and indigent persons lawfully settled therein."
What about the idea that the temporary relief is designed to alleviate either the sickness or the distress? How does pain make someone less sick?
How does what? I'm sorry?
How does paying the bill make someone less sick? The statute connects... Can you finish this?
Go ahead.
The statute connects the sickness or the distress with the response that the county is duty-bound to provide of temporary relief. How does paying the bill make someone less sick or alleviate their sickness?
Paying the bill takes care of a VERA, although not even fully, because it's noted in footnote 4 of our...
Take care of whom, I'm sorry?
VERA St. Mary's.
No, but I think the duty is not to a VERA. The duty is to the person who's lying sick.
Exactly. And but for a VERA, having that duty shifted from the county to it, again, it's not a Good Samaritan like in Roan. It's not an individual that voluntarily provided these services. They are mandated under federal law that when someone like JR shows up at their threshold, they have no choice. They must treat. They must stabilize. And the nature of temporary relief is that amount of relief necessary to alleviate the situation of the problem. So a quick analogy, if a person back then broke their hip or leg, well, here's a pair of crutches. That's it. You're taken care of. You know, in JR's case, what would have been the answer? Half a surgery? Kick him out the door after the surgery was done? I submit to you that the temporary relief, as already discussed in Roan and labeled and discussed in Hamlin, covers the amount of care or as the case may require to get the person where they were before. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. You need a rag, or are you okay?
I got it. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Mr. Heeb, early on, right out of the gate, I'd like you to address this reference to federal law that counsel just made. Avera's arguing in their briefs that interpreting 281337 as requiring pre-authorization violates federal law. Can you address that?
Gladly, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I think it's exactly the opposite. There's nothing about that federal law that causes this statute to violate federal law. It's to Justice Salter's point, what's been happening with this interpretation of this statute is we're conflating the terms treatment and payment. We're making them one and the same, and they're not. He is correct. In fact, they make the argument in their briefs. Federal law obligates us to provide this treatment. Why? Because we're taking Medicare money. We're obligated to provide treatment to non-Medicare patients who need emergency care and are indigent. That's the deal that Avera makes. Sully County's not part of that deal. And the legislature did not mandate notice. That's not what this case rises and falls on. What this case rises and falls on is the, number one, the resident or non-resident status of this particular individual. And because they are a non-resident, there was no payment obligation, duty that the county has. When we look at how this has been treated and the way this argument has been made, there are two separate issues that I believe are getting mixed and matched in an effort to piece this together and create the same duty to a non-resident as you have to a resident. Those are treatment and payment, which I just talked about, and the other terms are duty and authority or authorization. The way this is set up, the way I think it pretty clearly reads, Section 33 creates a mandatory duty to pay for the treatment of your residents if they are indigent and they need emergency hospital care. 37 and 38, as this court has said numerous times, have to be read together. You read the statutes together if they deal with a common issue. 37 is where the mandatory duty is written as it relates to non-residents. What is that duty? As the court has already discussed during appellant's argument, it's a temporal duty in situations where a person is sick or in distress in your county without friends and appears to be indigent, you have a duty to inquire into the matter. What happens after that? You move to 38. 38 is the statute that talks about if you decide after inquiry that this person fits in that category, what can you do? If you look at 38, 38 does not say shall anywhere. It is purely discretionary. You might ask, well, why is that? Well, because counties are creatures of statute. They have no authority to act unless the legislature says they can act. They have no authority to go out and commit acts of charity, however beneficial they might think they may be or however deserving they are. They can only do what the legislature says they can do. And that applies in particular to payment. That applies in particular to writing checks for things, using taxpayer dollars to write checks. 38 gives them the discretion to do that. It allows them, if they decide that somebody, after inquiry under 37, fits the category and they want to, in their discretion, pay bills, they can do it. And I think the court has been clear about that going all the way back to Roan, that that is a thing they could do, but they're not obligated to do it. And so that's really where, from a construction standpoint, this case begins and ends.
And what standard of review is applied to that determination?
That is a de novo standard, Your Honor. You know, how to interpret those statutes is a de novo standard. It's a clearly erroneous standard if we're looking at, were the county's factual determinations correct? However, in this particular case, I would submit those factual determinations, number one, didn't have to be made. And number two, this case didn't need to go up and down the two times that it did. I would suggest that once it was determined and agreed by Avera, which it was at that initial hearing, this is a non-resident, then we're under 37. And then the only question is, okay, what was the county's duty? The county's duty was to inquire, look into it. Now, Mr. Nelson wants to extend that duty past the temporal state, okay? And he says, well, their duty was once we got notice, once Sully County got notice, we needed to go to the hospital in Hughes County and inquire. Okay, I don't think that's a correct interpretation, but let's say it is. Let's say that we go there. Let's say we interpret the statute to require Sully County to go to Hughes County and look into the matter. It doesn't get Avera any further down the road to creating a mandatory duty on the part of the county to pay. Because if they go and inquire and they determine this person is in distress, they're indigent, they're without friends, and they're in immediate need of some type of help, you then move to 38 to say, okay, what can or do they have to do? Nothing in 38 requires them to do anything. It allows them.
Sorry, but 37 does contain, it's not just to examine, it's examine and grant such temporary relief. And maybe that question isn't before us at this point because of the manner in which the county made its determination as to what that relief is. But it does seem broader than just examine. So can you address that?
I sure can. Thank you, Your Honor. And I would submit to you that even and grant such temporary relief as the nature of the case may require, that's the way it reads, you then move to 38. You still have to move to 38 to see, is there a mandatory duty? Is there a obligation, like we see in 33, that says, hey, if all of these boxes are checked, you got to pay the bill. That's what that's about, is paying the bill.
let's make it a variation of this version of the facts. JR is still in Soli County.
Yes.
And the county commissioners are made aware that he's lying sick in the place where he's staying.
Yes.
He has this appendicitis. Tell me how their obligation under the statute works in that scenario where he hasn't been transported yet. What does the county have to do then?
I think they need to render temporary relief as the nature of the case may require.
So what would that be?
Under these facts, not having been there, I think it's reasonable to say, okay, the county needs to get him to a hospital potentially. The county needs to get him out of that situation. But it doesn't say they have to pay whoever it is that they ultimately take him to. And this, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There seems like a connection between the nature of the temporary relief and its direct relationship to alleviating the lying sickness or the distress. Those seem to be very much acting in concert in an emergent sense. So when that abates, is the county out? Or their duty is discharged?
Yes, I would agree with that. The duty is discharged once that abates. And where does that abate? Mr. Nelson would suggest it abates once they're discharged from the hospital. I don't agree with that, but more importantly, I don't think it matters, and I'm going to use his example. He has talked about how if Soli County had a hospital, this would be different. The only reason we're talking about this is because Soli County doesn't have a hospital, and this individual had to go to Hughes County to get this treatment. I would submit it wouldn't change anything. If Soli County had a hospital in Oneida, the county's obligation under 37 would have been the same as it was here. And if the facts were the same, which is an acquaintance took him to the hospital, checked him in, he received his treatment, the county never had an obligation in this case because it never arose. It never came to them in that scenario that you laid out, Justice Myron. So these facts never really got us to 37, even this set of facts, because he had an acquaintance who took him to the hospital. The hospital maintains, well, yeah, we treated him because federal law requires us to. Correct. It does. It requires you to. Nothing in federal law says, and now the county has to pay for it, just like nothing in state law says it. Federal law says, well, no, you're going to pay for that because you're taking Medicare dollars from us. And, you know, they've argued it in their briefs. There are a number of federal laws that say because we get this, we have to do that. There is no equity in saying, well, because of that, now we're going to push it over to the county, even without a legislative mandate to do it.
So you're reading, I'm going to take you back to standard of review for a second. So your reading of the statute, 37 and 38 together, is the 38 gives the county commission discretion to pay in these circumstances where they find a non-resident lying in their county that's sick or in distress, whether not in the county, but in distress. So, county denies, doesn't make payment, goes to the circuit court. What's the circuit court's standard of review? In how does the circuit court assess the county's decision?
If it's the case like this one where the parties have agreed it's a non-resident, the circuit court standard of review is a de novo standard. They read the statute and they say, well, under those facts, you guys are agreeing on the facts. The only one that's really relevant is it a resident? He's not a resident, so therefore there's no mandatory duty to pay, and hospital loses. That would be my position with regard to that, which is why I've said it doesn't matter whether there's a hospital in Soli County or not. The situs of the hospital is not relevant, because 37, and in fact 38, the payment, the reason 38 I think clearly does speak to payment, and it's clearly discretionary, but the last sentence talks about if the county decides to exercise this discretion, this willingness to pay voluntarily, the county furnishing the relief shall be entitled to reimbursement from the county in which said poor person has established residency. So they even provide, the legislature even provides in those cases for the county to go back to the county of residence to get their money back. So I think it clearly indicates a two-step process, two statutes, and what's happened in this case, and I think the mistake that got made, candidly, and the reason for our notice of review in this case, is that the statutes didn't get read together. They got conflated in a way. And where you find duty in 37, you then take it and carry it over to 38 and use it and tie it to grant such relief by providing the same relief as is customary in cases involving a resident. And if you tie them together that way, yes, you can make the argument. Unfortunately, that's not a fair reading of those statutes together. And I would answer Mr. Nelson's question when he said, well, what? How else would the legislature do it? Very simply, they would simply take the residency requirement out of 33, because that's exactly what Mr. Nelson is arguing. What Rivera is arguing in this case is that residency is irrelevant. And in fact, that's the decision the trial court made in that first hearing when she sent it back down. And I would submit that was error when she said residency is not a factor here. The fact that you've stipulated that this individual is not a resident is irrelevant to the question of whether the county has to pay. I think it's the first question. And if you don't get past it, there is a right to pay. There's an ability to pay, which wouldn't exist without the legislature authorizing it. But there's not an obligation to pay. And if the legislature wanted to create an obligation to pay, they certainly knew how to do it. They did it in 33. They could have added... they could have taken away the residency requirement that they put in 33. They didn't. Or they could have simply amended 38 and said, hey, if you find this, you have to pay. They didn't do that either.
It seemed like the court, though, was not, I don't know that it was saying that whether this person was a resident doesn't matter, but it seemed to me that the court was trying to make a determination as to the other things in 37. Those facts, are those facts met, and conducted a de novo review with regard to those facts to see if the statute applies here. And so tell me, why was that improper?
I would agree with you with regard to the second hearing. The first hearing, which is found in the settled record, and I actually have it written down here, 217 to 246 is the transcript of that first hearing. The first half of it relates to a different case. It's the second half. The conclusion reached at that first hearing, which was purely a question of law argued by the attorneys, was if this isn't a resident, is there any entitlement to relief? And she answered that question in the affirmative. She said, I don't think residency matters. I don't, if it's a non-resident, they still can get relief, and then sent it back down and said, now I want you to tell me why they're not entitled to it. The second time up, yes, Justice, then the focus was on what were the reasons. And I would submit there was no reason to go there. I would submit that once the determination was made that it was not a resident, that this individual is not a resident, the determination is then, well, there's no mandatory duty. They can pay if they choose to, but they're not obligated to pay for the treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heap. Mr. Nelson, you may proceed with your rebuttal.
Nelson, would it make sense for the legislature to distinguish between residents and non-residents in terms of defining a county's duty to act to include pay? Would it make sense to draw that distinction between residents and non-residents?
Avera submits that the county drew the distinction only between residents and non-residents, giving them some discretion, but the obligation to pay is subsumed or covered by the obligation to provide.
I think the text is always, you know, what we have to really go to, but I can't help but, when I read this, sort of come away, the 37 statute there is, I'm sorry, come away with a thought, and you can tell me, undoubtedly disagree with this, but there's one way to read this text in its plainly stated terms, where you synthesize it and say, hey, this is a humanitarian statute that is designed to compel a duty to the county to help somebody who is facing very grave circumstances, physically or in other sorts of distress. So this is a humanitarian duty to act, and when that emergency doesn't exist or doesn't exist any longer, or they don't know about that emergency until it abates, there is no duty. So doesn't this seem like a humanitarian sort of statute?
If the court wants to refer to it as such, that's fine. I don't know.
The text will ultimately tell us, but I'm just sort of, it's a short statute. It's kind of a one-liner.
37. Yeah, well, here's Avera's response to that. Number one, there is no site in the record that says because Avera receives federal funds through Medicare that we're obligated to provide medical care and treatment to non-paying people. So it's on us, not on the county. There's nothing in that that says that. We're obligated to provide care first and then worry about payment later. And there's tens of millions of dollars that goes uncompensated, not only in Medicare and Medicaid adjustments or contractual allowances, but everything else. So that is a red herring and a false flag. Secondly, we wouldn't be here if the court hadn't finally convinced the county to say, look, we're not talking about a resident, we're talking about a non-resident. That's why we're under 37, and 37 and 38 were created by the legislature to extend the benefits or the relief provided under 2813 to non-residents. It's not Avera that's conflating the facts and the issues. County, ever since that remand, has tried to say, okay, well, we're under 37, so he's a non-resident. But then we got to go back and we got to look under section 1 of 2813 that says, well, you can't provide care unless they're a resident. The county would prefer to ignore and pretend like 37 and 38 don't exist. The county ignores the exculpatory language at the beginning of section 3 and 33, both of which Council Heeb says hammers the point home that that's what we're trying to argue, but both statutes begin except as otherwise provided in this statute or in this chapter. Except as, well, for non-residents. It's very clear if you read from the front to the back of 2813, the majority of those statutes deal with residents.
So how do you then apply and deal with the fact that the 38 statute, the 2813-38, is written as a may, and it seems to provide discretion if they make the determination that it is warranted as temporary relief, what that relief would be.
Thank you, Justice Delaney. What that is, though, is a minor amount of discretion tempered by the language of the words that if they would provide the same relief to a resident, then they have to do it to the non-resident.
If there is no distinction between residents and non-residents, why do we have different sections within that chapter that seemingly note the distinction?
There is a distinction. I mean, the hoops that Avera St. Mary's has to jump through in order to seek reimbursement for residents are vastly greater. The problem with Roan, which is the problem, not the statute. The problem with Roan is that the Roan majority turns the county's statutory duty or mandate on its head with a reasoning or holding that such duty is a discretionary contract or authority oversight. 37 is not. It's mandatory. It shall, two steps, investigate and provide relief as the case may require. Okay, you decided that you've investigated, maybe you should provide relief. Then you go to 38. Well, under 38, if you would provide same care and treatment, in other words, you would pay for the care under 38 to a resident of the county, then that obligates you to provide it to a non-resident. May I extend my time 30 seconds for a closing statement?
What do you want to say? Go ahead.
Justices, this court can either assist the trial court by holding section 37 was met by Avera St. Mary's notice in the present tense, while JR was still an acute inpatient and lying in distress, even though he was not within the border of Sully County. That is an easy reach. It's not too hard to do to interpret the statute that way. The trial court already reached the conclusion that those statutes were enacted by the legislature to extend hospital care or treatment under Chapter 2813 to non-residents. Instructing the court or the trial court to provide relief, or the other alternative is if you apply 37 as the county asserts, you're going to get the absurd result for Sully County that they can hide behind federal law, hide behind the fact that they don't have a hospital within their border. And Sully County and 22 other counties in the state will absolutely 110% for the rest of their existence immunize themselves from any claim for relief for a non-resident. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes.